Welcome back, everybody. Just a real quick, hi, Deacon. Deacon Tom there, how are you doing? Okay, real quick, some have asked about the Begin Again books. We would love for you to have a copy, $15 straight, and you'll never get a better deal on that, okay? Unless you buy it used and you don't want that, because people have used highlighters and blah. But anyway, and we will have the credit cards set up by tomorrow, but feel free to take the books, and then we'll just take your name, and then I have your address. I know where you live, GPS. So without any further hesitation, let's go ahead and we'll get started.
And then just one other practical note. People have asked if you want me to sign a book, I'm happy to do it. Just stop me anytime before or after a session here, wherever you meet me. I'm always happy to do that. So, all right, let's just pray the Hail Mary again. Ask Our Lady's love and blessing on this afternoon. Hail Mary. Venerable Bruno Lanteri, Father and of the Son and of the Holy Spirit. All right, this afternoon we'll dive right into the first of the themes. We could say more about the life of Venerable Bruno. I know a lot of us have a lot of that background already, and then we will be showing Nunc Chaepi, the documentary, tonight, so you'll get more. And we'll see. If time permits, we may go back to some more of the slides, but I think you've been pretty well introduced to Venerable Bruno at this point. So if you take in the booklet that you have on page 8, the first of our themes, Living the Spiritual Life. And I'd like to begin with this letter to Gabriela. This is Gabriela Solaro de la Margarita. Gabriela was married as a young woman, very quickly widowed, had no children in the first marriage, and then shortly after married a second time. She had 6 children in her second marriage, her lifelong marriage. 2 of her sons, again, I mentioned infant mortality, 2 of them died very young. So at the time when this letter is written, she has 3 children. She has 2 daughters and a son. Her son actually became well known in those who are students of the Italian history of the day. He became the equivalent of the Secretary of State in this country, called the Minister for Foreign Affairs, for the government of the Kingdom of Piedmont, and was well known, either loved or vilified, as a strong Catholic in a government in which it was not easy to be a strong and faithful Catholic. Probably was spiritually directed by Venerable Bruno during the years of Clement was his name, in the years when he was a student at the University of Turin. The family went through all the struggles of the times that we just described. When the French defeated and occupied Piedmont, they evicted Gabriela's family from the family home and took it over, and only returned it after the defeat of Napoleon. Used it for military purposes and so forth, and completely destroyed the property, basically, when they returned. Life was not easy for Gabriela. Her husband was a good man, but simply left all the administration to her. And so she had the weight of the family, of the finances. She was able to put the property back into livable condition. And she was an intelligent woman, a very capable woman. She could also be somewhat sharp and impatient and strong. And you'll see Venerable Bruno addressing that in these letters of spiritual direction. Most of the spiritual direction was done by letter. Travel distances that today are nothing for us. You get in the car, in half an hour you're there. Were long trips in those days. And there was geographically not a great deal of distance. As you saw this morning, the distances were not large. But enough so that personal visits were not all that frequent. And most of the direction was done by letter. And obviously, no, we don't have any of her letters to Venerable Bruno for obvious reasons. As a spiritual director, that was confidential. He would destroy those. He would not keep them. But she did keep several, at least probably many, of his letters. After his death, when they were first beginning to gather material toward the canonization process, the Oblates wrote to the family and asked if they had any of his letters of spiritual direction. And it was Gabriella's daughter-in-law, who Clemente's wife, obviously, who went through what she could find in the family papers and found three of these letters and also a little handwritten note in which she had jotted down some things that Venerable Bruno had said to her just verbally when they'd actually met on one occasion. So these are the letters that we have. And the one that we look at first here is the first of these three letters. This is in 1807. So at this point, Venerable Bruno has been a priest for 25 years. He is 48 years old. And he writes to her, "My lady and my daughter in Jesus Christ, your letter just arrived. I was glad to receive it, and it gave me real joy." You'll see this in all of Venerable Bruno's letters of spiritual direction. It always starts, or very easily starts, for him on the human level. And with a lot of affection. He was not just a man doing a job. He really cares about these people, and they knew it. And that was one of the reasons that I think they found themselves so easily able to open up to him and so desirous of his spiritual direction. "It gave me real joy. I am happy to hear that your trip, some trip obviously that she was on, went well, and that your whole family is in good health." And then he responds to a question for counsel that Gabriella has obviously asked of him. "I see no reason why you should not entrust your little Louise." This would not have been her own daughter, but some family member, a niece perhaps, "to your dear sister, the Lady Countess Vidoa. She could not be in better hands, and the reasons for doing so are many. In my view, you may do this with total peace." So thus far, as I say, the letter begins with a simple human connection. Answer to a family question. But very quickly, as always with Bruno, his heart goes where his heart really centers, and that is to what is spiritual. "And it gives me greater happiness still." So there's more than simply human happiness here. There's a joy in the Lord here because of the good spiritual news that she has shared with him. "It gives me greater joy still to know that Father Ferrero," so this was a priest who is going to serve as a chaplain in some local church, which now gives Gabriella easy access, or much easier than she's had before, to daily Mass and communion. "Gives me greater happiness still to know that Father Ferrero is already there with you." Now look at the first thing that he mentions. Well, it is important then to do what? Begin. You're going to see this over three times in this single letter. Begin. Begin again. Begin immediately. Begin now. Don't wait. Why hesitate? Start. And the adverb, begin when? Immediately. Don't let time pass. And to begin immediately to do what? "It is important then to begin immediately to arrange with him for receiving communion, and to do so as often as you can." Now, if you think of this against the background of a pastoral practice, widespread pastoral practice, in which people would go, you know, the Easter duty? We probably all heard that phrase. This is a setting, once a year. If you go to communion once a year, you have fulfilled your obligation, so to speak. And against that background, Venerable Bruno says, go as often as you can. As often as you can get to Mass and to communion during the week, do it. Now you have much more access than you had before. I'm delighted. It gives me great happiness to know that. Don't wait. Start. "You must be," and then after the Eucharist, "you must be consistently faithful to meditation and spiritual reading." These are two key practices that he will urge on his spiritual directees over and over and over again. Meditation. Have some point in your day in which you stop and in an unhurried way ponder, reflect, enter into the mysteries of the faith. So that might be Lectio Divina, if that's the way we find ourselves helped to do this. Look at the setting we're in right now. Ignatian meditation or contemplation, the rosary, liturgy of the hours. There may be many different ways in which, but in some way that best helps us to do it, spend some time each day in unhurried reflection, meditation is the classic word, on the truths of our faith. What's going to happen if we do that? We're not going to stay in the same place spiritually. Faith is going to come more and more alive. And then the second is spiritual reading. Now, it's obvious to us, having seen what we did this morning about the book and the place of reading, why Venerable Bruno would insist on this over and over again. If you've listened to the podcast, then you know that every time Chris and I went over this, we would always expand this today, obviously, to digital resources. So read several pages from a spiritual book or listen to a podcast. Watch a video on YouTube, on Formed, on whatever it might be. Spend some time each day taking in the nourishment that comes in what's classically called spiritual reading, and of course is amplified digitally today. And now Venerable Bruno is never one, as you'll see very quickly, he is never one to simply throw out broad strokes in the spiritual life. Well, it would be good if you tried to meditate. If you went to confession to Venerable Bruno, for example, or you had a meeting of spiritual direction with him, he is not one who would simply say to you, you know, meditation is a classic and valued practice. It's very fruitful. Try to have some meditation if you can in your life, and spiritual reading is good. Now, that's great advice, but Venerable Bruno will always take it to the next level where it becomes practical, concrete, and doable. And he does that. Now, this is a woman with four children, a large household, a property to manage, with all kinds of demands on her time. And so he says to her, you must be consistently faithful to meditation and to spiritual reading, all right, if it be only a quarter of an hour of meditation. Can we get 15 minutes a day for some kind of unhurried, reflective, meditative prayer? I would wager that for most of us, probably all of us, the answer is yes. I just thinking of my mom as I say this, I'm from a large family, you know, all kinds of younger brothers and sisters, and having us pray the rosary in the car when we're driving somewhere. The only way that she could get time during the day to do that until the children grew. And then she had more time. And as regards spiritual reading, if it be only a quarter of an hour of meditation and a single page of spiritual reading. So here is one of us who says, there are so many demands in my time. Work, family, financial responsibilities, doctors, whatever it might be. Is there any one of us who could not read one page a day of spiritual reading? And what would happen if we did every day? Of course we can do more if our circumstances permit, and we already are doing more. I remember last year, I didn't think to do it. Well, of course, I was on my way here this year. But last year, as Lent was starting, I posted this on Facebook. And the commentaries were very interesting. People said, that's doable. 15 minutes of meditation. And I've preached this in homilies at times. You always get the same response. So this will always be Venerable Bruno. Here are important spiritual practices. Don't be without them. But find a way to do them that fits realistically and doably with the vocation that God has given you and the commitments. And that's possible. And notice the adverb. He doesn't just say, he says, be consistently. Be consistently faithful. Choose practices that are solid, are nourishing. Choose a way of doing them that you can sustain and then be faithful to it. Elsewhere, he calls that a holy determination, a kind of a holy obstinacy. I am not going to let this go. I would imagine, if you just imagine Gabriella reading this letter, you can imagine herself saying, you know what, I can do that. She would say, too, that's doable. And all right, so mass, meditation, spiritual reading. And the same also for the examination of conscience, which he will never simply let go. which, and notice the same practicality, the examination of conscience, which you can do while you are working. Well, I don't have time in the evening. There are children to get to, all sorts of things. Is there a time when your hands are busy, but your mind could be free? I always remember reading in the life of St. Maria of the Incarnation how when she was still in France as a young girl, she would watch her mother working, and she would see her mother's lips moving silently as her mother was working, praying. So again, he doesn't want her to let the day go by without this review with the Lord of the spiritual experience of the day, but again proposes to her a way that is doable. If you have a quiet time, probably many of us do, then you can do this in a different setting. But he's writing right now to a woman with a very busy life, with children, a family, you know, the household, and everything else that she's dealing with, financial struggles, and so on. Again, you can see Gabriella nodding and saying, yeah, that I could do. That I could do. The examination of conscience. Today you can use the classic, if I get onto that, that's a whole nother retreat. And you know what's nice now? We've done these series so that I can refer you to a series of conversations with Chris on the, we called it a daily prayer of discernment, the daily examine prayer. There's a whole richness there that would be too much to get into now, but that prayer is much more than simply looking at a catalog of our failures and faults in the day. We do need to see that. That's what we do at the start of every Mass, obviously. And the just man falls seven times a day serenely. We know that. But sincerely, with goodwill, but we know that. But there's much more to this. If you look at the way St. Ignatius experienced this and taught this, it becomes a review of where God has been in the day. Where Chris is holding up the... I will leave this up to you in the discussion and questions. If you want me to say more about that, I'd be very happy to. But it's a beautiful prayer. You know, when I wrote the book on that was published in 2006, and that was the first book on that. I felt kind of bold doing it because it had never been done. Since then, at least three or four others have been written. You know, it's just really catching on. Chris has a lovely meditated examine on discerning hearts, too, which is very beautiful. Okay, so this is part of the spiritual program, the spiritual life that he encourages. The difference, I remember a woman saying to me, when we were speaking about the examination of conscience / examine prayer, she said, before I prayed this prayer, I was just reacting. Now I'm responding. And there's a world of difference. When our eyes are opened a little, to use Ignatius' phrase, we're in touch with the spiritual experience going on where God has been, above all, where the enemy may have been trying to discourage us and so on. We see it and we choose our response to it. And if we're doing that day by day, again, something very... I will say this, and those of us who have been praying the examine prayer daily for some time know this. A point comes when you just don't want to be without it. Initially, you'll struggle a bit with it. That's normal in anything. The first time you try to play a piano or pick up a golf club or whatever it is, of course we struggle. But if you pray it faithfully with all the ups and downs, as I say, a point will come when you just won't want to be without it because you'll know the difference that it makes. And this is what he encourages in her. All right. So these are the specific practices. What about the rest of the day? Do not forget to raise your heart, and again the adverb, do not forget to raise your heart frequently. And now speaking to this woman who can be impatient and tending toward sharpness at times, do not forget to raise your heart frequently, but gently and with peace to God. And then he encourages her to mortification. But look at what he says to this woman with the stresses on her life and her own individual person. And he says, do not forget to make acts of mortification, especially interior ones. Now, mortification can be either interior or exterior. Exterior mortification is what we tend to think of more habitually, and that is penance with regard to food or sleep or depriving ourselves of various things. Interior mortification is a self-denial on the interior level, a self-control in certain situations, maybe not allowing myself to say those words that would be better left unsaid, or various things of this kind. And so his focus to this busy woman with demands on her energy is don't omit for mortification. We need that. Jesus told us, let him pick up his cross, deny himself, and follow me, that that's part of our lives as Christians. But the focus, as he guides this woman spiritually for her, is especially interior. And to make acts of mortification, especially interior ones. And then he specifies further, for you, in your individual vocations, circumstances of life, with the strengths and struggles of your own personality, for you, this means the effort to live each moment with a gentle and joyful spirit. And you can see Gabriella after reading this letter, when she feels herself tempted to respond sharply to one of her children or to someone in the household, remembering this counsel and striving to speak gently and joyfully as she interacts with this person. You would want, I think, to be around a person who was being spiritually directed by Venerable Bruno. You would know that something was going on. Now, you can amplify this to the countless people who came to him in confession. Can you see that if you came to him in confession, you were not going to get just generalities? You know, try to do some spiritual reading. He'd say that, you know, this, the practice of the love of Jesus Christ by St. Alphonsus, I think, would be very helpful for you. Try to get a copy and read it. It's going to be very precise and directed specifically toward each person's need, both in the sacrament and in spiritual direction. All right, for you this means, and so forth. And then one more urging, and strongly, it's said twice, for the love of God, so it's already said strongly, I beg of you, reinforced, for the love of God, I beg of you what? To wage continual warfare against negative moods and never fail to what? Yeah, for a second time already in this letter, that theme of beginning with hope, with energy, don't ever just let yourself sit in discouragement. You don't need to. You can always start. There's nothing stopping you. Now, immediately. Why wait? God loves to receive you when you turn to him. And never fail to begin again. Do not wait until you have devotion to begin these things. Now, by devotion, he would mean to feel the warmth of God's closeness. In Ignatian terms, spiritual consolation. Well, I don't feel the Lord's closeness. I don't feel like I'm very holy. I don't feel like I'm very close to the Lord. I struggle. I fail. I don't think I can live a life like this. And that's what he's addressing here. Don't wait until you have what you're calling devotion here, that warm sense of God's closeness. Don't wait for that first before you begin this. On the contrary, look at the next verb here. Begin. Begin even without devotion, since that will come with time. And this is precisely the means to attain it. Devotion must be the fruit, the result, the consequence, and not the cause of the practices I have recommended. There he's speaking to any of us who may feel this is a beautiful program, there are all these holy people that I know, but I'm not like that. I don't have that same feeling of closeness to God. Begin. Do these practices in a way that's doable, that fits with your vocation, and you will find that all of that will come. That sense of warmth and closeness to God is the fruit, not the origin, not the cause of these practices. For the rest, you know that true devotion consists in readiness to be faithful to the Lord and not in sentiment. I hope that you will soon send me consoling news in this regard. And then goes on. I ask you to give my greetings to Father Cesare. So this is another priest. I don't know more about him. And to tell him that I would be happy to see him here in Turin, where Venerable Bruno is residing, and that I always hope to be able one day to visit with him. For the present, tell Father Ferraro, so he is the local chaplain, that even though I have not yet had the joy of meeting him, I ask him to give you no rest in committing yourself to practicing. So he's got a man on the spot, you know. In practicing all that I have just recommended to you, and to call you strictly to account, and I will be grateful to him for this. I bless you together with all your family. I recommend myself to your prayers, and I am, with the highest esteem and respect, your servant and father in Jesus Christ, Father Lanteri. Let's go to page 40, where you have the second letter. And I think already you can almost foresee what he's going to say to her. All right, yeah, page 40. Oh, by the way, just you jogged my memory. Somebody asked me if the person who read the book and was converted from atheism, who that was. That was not Venerable Bruno. That was Father Diesbach. He was born a Calvinist, fell away from that into atheism through the reading that he did as a soldier, and then through the book that I mentioned this morning, found in the house of the Spanish consul, had the change of heart and came to the Lord. All right, this next letter that we're looking at is written a little over a year after the one that we just saw. And the occasion is that Gabriella's son, Clemente, who is studying in Turin, is going back to visit the family. And so in this time, Venerable Bruno is not replying to a letter from her. He is simply taking the occasion as her son is departing to send her a brief message. So he says, I would like to use this opportunity of the departure from Turin of Monsieur, your son, for some profit, but I do not know of what I should speak. So he's had... Oh, I'm sorry. Okay, this is a different printing then. All right. I'm glad that you told me that. So what page is it on? 36. How about the lines? Is this line 582? Okay, that's just different. Okay. All right, page 36 then. All right, so I would like to use this opportunity of the departure from Turin of Monsieur, your son, for some profit. But I do not know of what I should speak, because he hasn't had any recent letter from her. Should I praise you for your fidelity to God? Ought I chide you? I do not know at all. All right, since he doesn't know at all, don't look at what follows. What's he going to tell her? Yeah. Yeah. It's only half an hour we've been doing this, and you've already got it. Can you see why we chose that title for the book? It's so central. And, you know, I have seen beautiful things happen with those two words alone. One woman made a retreat. We have a retreat house just outside of Boston, and phrases like this from Venerable Bruno are on the wall. And she told me that from her retreat, which was several days, the principal thing that she took from it was just this phrase of Venerable Bruno, just don't ever get discouraged, begin again. And I've had at times people come for spiritual direction with absolutely shattering things having happened in their lives, and they'll see that on the wall, because we have that on the wall in our church in Boston as well. As you walk out of the church toward where you're going to meet, where my office was at that time, you would pass a framed copy of this on the wall. And I've had people just tell me how much that meant when they felt like they were at dead ends. And just to hear that, you know, there's never a dead end. It doesn't matter where you've been in your life, what you've done in your life, where you are now, no matter how terrible you think the consequences are and how absolutely definitive and final and unchangeable they are, there is never anything that can stop you right now from turning to God, if we need it, asking his forgiveness, which he delights to give, and beginning again. That simple message, simple. It's almost the heart of the whole gospel, because that's really what Jesus is about, you know, giving humanity a chance to begin again in a way, you know, in all of us. So I do not know it all. So I will take a sure course, and that is to counsel you to begin each day. Every morning when you rise, begin. What about the past and the future? To begin each day, abandoning the past to the Lord's what? Can we do that? Do we do that? What about those burdens that we carry from things in the past in our lives? Can we abandon the past to the Lord's mercy? Look at the kinds of things both St. John Paul II and the present Pope have said about mercy. It's a beautiful thing. Abandoning the past to the Lord's mercy and the future to what? To His divine providence. Why, what if we could really do that? Because like you, I worry about the future, about all kinds of things. How's this going to go? What's going to happen with that person? And he says to her, begin again each day. Just leave the past to God's mercy. Place the future in God's divine providence, and now begin today. Give yourself to the Lord today. Respond to your vocation and your calling today. In the meantime, before he hears more about you, before I hear more from you, reflect that each day you are entrusted with a mission by the good God. This is another key thing. You know that famous prayer of John Henry Newman, when he says, God has entrusted to me some task which he has not entrusted to another. I am necessary for his purposes. I have my mission. Every one of us here does. There's a reason why God has brought every one of us here into the world at this time and in the place where we live and in relationship with the people that are part of our lives, family, parents, children, relatives, people we know in the workplace, in the parish. Each of us has a task that no one else can do. When the angel asked Mary to be the mother of God, there was no other Mary. Her yes or her no, she was the only one. No one else can love those children but you in that way. As a mother, or as a parent, as a father, as a brother, as a sister, as a grandparent. And it's from this that we get St. John Paul II's repeated insistence on the dignity of each human person. And so this is what Venerable Bruno says to her. Just consider every day as you begin the day and you go about the tasks that are going to be part of it, that you are saying, as you do these faithfully, a yes to a particular mission that from all eternity God has given to you. I mentioned I'm from a large family. One day I was sitting in the kitchen. My mom was making up a lunch, brown bag lunch, for one of my younger brothers and sisters, and she was making sandwiches. And I just asked her, I said, how many sandwiches have you made in your life? And she just laughed. Remember that each day you've been entrusted with a mission. You could go through this biblically if we had time. You know, Jeremiah, before I formed you in the womb, I knew you. I consecrated you as a prophet, the suffering servant from my mother's womb. You know, you gave me my name, Paul, he who called me from my mother's womb, and so on. It's true of every one of us. Everyone in this room is precious. And the other word, there's even a book now that's been written with this single word as its title, every one of us is unrepeatable. As John Paul II said, every one of us is unique and unrepeatable. Beloved in God's eyes, each of us has a specific mission, and at the end of our lives, that's the one thing that's going to matter. Have we walked that road? Have we fulfilled that mission, which no one else can do, and which God has given to us? In the meantime, reflect each day you are entrusted with a mission by the good God. All right? What about household and financial issues, property, all of these things, children's future? In regard to your temporal affairs, never let anything trouble you. Probably easier said than done, I imagine. But you can see where he's leading her. Leave the future to God's providence. Of course, do all that you need to do. That's the mission. Do what the Lord has asked you to do. But without trouble of heart, as much as God will give grace. In regard to your temporal affairs, never let anything trouble you. And the same with respect to your faults. Now, if I may say this with reverence, I think that for some of us, maybe for many of us, the thing that most does trouble us is our faults. Because we know that we fail at times. The just man falls 7 times a day, as we've said. And it's hard to see the same failings over and over and over again. If you're Gabriella, I was sharp again with another child. I should have been patient in that situation, and I let my, the stirrings of anger that I felt direct my activity more than I would have wanted. I intended to pray this day, and somehow I let the day slip by, or whatever it could be. And we get discouraged, which parenthetically is why we find the examination of conscience difficult, until you learn what it really is. Okay, that's where the examine prayer comes in. And so he says to her, never let anything trouble you, and the same with respect to your faults. Biblically, this is Peter in the boat at the catch of fish, when he realizes that the divine has now come close to him in Jesus of Nazareth, in the sign of the fish, and there with the boat filled almost to sinking, falls on his knees at the feet of Jesus and says what we often say when we feel God get close. Depart from me. I'm a sinful man. I can't be this close to you. I'm not good enough. I have failings. I fall. I'm a sinner. And I've always loved Jesus' response. Doesn't argue with Peter. Simply says, do not be afraid, and confirms his belonging in the mission. And that's what Venerable Bruno is saying to this woman here in such a brief way. Be attentive to practice the virtues, and again, these are key virtues for her. Be attentive to practice the virtues of patience and gentleness. You can make a special examination concerning this in the evening and at midday. Take a look some mid part of the day on how things have gone with regard to being gentle and joyful. Take a look at it again in the evening. Try to do that every day if you can. The rest we can already imagine is going to come from what we saw in the earlier letter. Do not forget meditation at least for a quarter of an hour. Again, frequently raising up your heart to God throughout the day. Remember spiritual reading as well, if it be but a single page. Finally, do not fail to receive communion at least 2 or 3 times a week. Today, that would be easily be daily where that's possible. Basically, what that 2 or 3 times a week says is that for Venerable Bruno, the Eucharist is the absolute center. Stay as close to it as you can. There's your deep source of strength. Get there as often as you can. And for her, that isn't going to be every day, given her occupations, but at least 2 or 3 times a week, if she can. I beg you to inform me about all these things, praying to the good God that he assist you in carrying them out. It may be that I will come myself to learn how you are doing. So he has the hope of visiting. It would be a great consolation for me. Now watch what follows here. I hope for it all the more, since my eyes, which grow continually weaker, will not permit me to dedicate myself to other occupations that might hinder me from coming as last year. So in the preceding year, he had planned a visit to Gabriella, but this would happen so often to him just because of the intensity of the various works that he had in hand. He had to forego the visit. You see this with other spiritual directees of his. But he says, this year I may be able to come. And the reason why is a physical infirmity. One of the several physical infirmities with which he had to struggle throughout his entire life was a weakness of the eyes. It may be that some of this was congenital. It's quite likely, too, that the intensity of his study over the years may have also aggravated this to some degree. But things got to the point, already as a seminarian, when he said, he later said that I studied theology more with my ears than with my eyes in conversation with fellow seminarians because his eyes just were too weak. Sometimes even the effort to use his eyes a little would cause him to be unable to use them, sometimes for weeks at a time. There's an up and a down in this. As you go through the letters in his life, there are various times when this becomes more or less difficult for him. And what I find striking here is that you can see not only is he not complaining about this to Gabriella, but he's actually looking for what can positively come from this. Since I may not be able to do this writing that I had promised someone or give that retreat because of my eyes, it may be possible for me to come and visit with you for a meeting of spiritual direction. If I can, we'll just never finish here. So just a little bit more. And then I'll just share this, that there was a time, it was 7 years ago now, when I had repeated surgeries vocally. And so of course, after every one of those surgeries, there's a time when you're not even allowed to speak, and then only very gradually do you recover. So through the course of a year and more, most of my ministry had to be canceled. One of the great gifts during that year was that's when Chris and I did the series of podcasts on Begin Again. It was really the only vocal ministry that I was doing. I just re-listened to those, as I mentioned, and I can see it in the last few, at least. You can tell that the voice is still not all that strong. It was a delight to have at least that to do at that time. But in the midst of that, of course, it got pretty discouraging for me. And I went to confession one day with Franciscan church downtown in Boston. And the confessor listened, and he said, you know, if you can't use your voice, do ministry in other ways, via the internet, digitally, email, different social media, whatever it is, and other things that he mentioned. I came out of there really heartened. Yeah, you know, I don't need to look at this physical limitation just as a burden, but I need to see the opportunity. Actually, that's why I got Begin Again written and finished, because I didn't have other ministry to do. Otherwise, it would have taken much longer to finish. But this is what you see in Venerable Bruno. He's looking for the gift in the physical infirmity, looking to see what the Lord may be offering in it. You remember the last years of St. John Paul II? You know, I actually saw him on a few occasions in Rome during those years. To look at him, if you saw someone looking like that in a nursing home, you would say, this person is in the right place and will probably never walk out of these doors. He was still traveling the world, still doing his ministry when he was in those circumstances. About 3 years before Venerable Bruno's death, we have a letter from a man who is now himself Blessed Johann Ruthan, who was a general of the Jesuits. He was stationed up in Turin and head of the Jesuit college there in Turin. And he and Father Lanteri were in frequent conversation and actually became good friends. Father Lanteri did a lot to help them get reestablished after they had been dissolved and so on. And we have a letter in which Ruthan writes to his general in Rome, and he tells him that, doesn't specify, but he says, Venerable Bruno recently here in Turin has accomplished something, some kind of apostolic work, which he says, given the amount of time in which he did it and his conditions of health, can only be called a miracle. That was the miracle of his life, that he never let this, he had other serious physical ailments, he never let them stop him. He never let them get discreet. You know, that Begin Again must have been a part of his life too, over and over again. It's not just advice for others. So you see that here in this letter. I do not have time to remain longer with you in this letter as I would desire, and so I conclude by recommending myself to your holy prayers and blessing you, having the honor of being your servant and Father in Jesus Christ, etc. Let's just look at one more thing, and then I'll conclude. If you go back to... Okay, so now you have to tell me what page it is. Let's see. Page 9. Okay. This next selection that you have here is from his own personal spiritual directory. Just shortly before ordination, he was ordained at 23 years. He had a papal dispensation from the age requirement. And in preparation for that, as a fruit of various retreats, probably meetings of spiritual direction with Father Diesbach, he put together a spiritual program of life for himself, which he always kept. We still have it today. It's 24 manuscript pages. Some of it you can see is written at various times over the course of those final years in preparation for a priesthood. In fact, he proposes to himself to reread the entire text every week in the months leading up to his priestly ordination. And this spiritual program was central to the rest of his life. Some pieces of it he took almost literally out of this document and gave to the Oblates when many years later he founded them. And the paragraph that you have here is one of these. There is a very similar version in the directory that he wrote for the Oblates. Here it's written personally for himself. And what he is prescribing for himself is the way that he wants to assist at Mass. Well, in this case, soon to celebrate Mass, actually. Although everything he says here works equally for the priest as celebrant or for the person who is attending Mass. And the focus here is what grace or what space am I seeking in my heart at the various points of the Mass? How do I want to live the Mass on the level of the heart? And what he writes here is timeless because it's essentially biblical. So this I do have to say, as I reviewed this preparing for coming here, I didn't get time because I had to pack, but when I get home, I'm going to print this out, tape it up on the wall of my room because I want to see this every day. So he says, in going to the altar, for any one of us that could be entering church for Mass, I will imagine seeing Simeon, who went in spirit to the temple for the presentation and circumcision of Jesus, or I will imagine some other fervent saint. Now, Simeon, this man who longs for the coming of the Christ, feels the stirrings in his heart to tell him, the Spirit's stirring in his heart that the Christ is coming to the temple. Can you imagine with what anticipation, with what desire, with what sense of reverence, of awe almost, of something uniquely powerful and beautiful in his life about to happen as he goes into the sacred edifice? That Lanteri says, that's what I'll ask of the Spirit to have in my own heart as I enter the church for the beginning of Mass. Or some other saint, some other fervent saint. Think of, when I was a seminarian, I did it all my studies in Rome. And as a deacon, I served three times for St. John Paul II. And I would just shamelessly stare at him. Just drinking in the sight of this man deeply immersed in prayer. As a sideline, every so often, he would suddenly look up and with this gaze of astounding, penetrating awareness of everything in his surroundings, and you felt like he was looking at you when he would do that. I'd just drop my eyes quickly. You know? As soon as he looked back down, I'd start looking again. But so Venerable Bruno says, what was in this man's heart as he approached the altar? Saint Therese of the Child Jesus as she walked into the chapel for Mass. Francis of Assisi. And so just as we are about to begin the Mass, we ask for that kind of space in our hearts as we approach the Mass. And I think I'm gonna stop there because you need a break here. But you can go through the rest of that, and you'll see in a number of them I've given you the biblical quote. And Chris and I did go through this in the podcasts. But you can see step by step how he invites us to live the Mass from the heart as we go through it. Okay? So, Chris.
Thank you. I love listening to him, don't you? Well, and primarily because I've read this over and over again, but having him go through it, I heard something new. And I think that's what happens when you, that's Lexio, that's what something new. So we're about to take some time now to give you a little over an hour or so to be able to go through and read once again, begin again, read what we've just gone through, plus additional material that is in this particular section. Now, as I said earlier, you may want to read, or maybe this is a time where something just spoke to your heart, something came up, and you just want to spend some time with the Lord. You may want to journal. There are questions, I don't know if you've seen those yet, that Father Gallagher put together. It would take me 6 months to put all the questions together. Father Gallagher, I think he said, would you like some? Sure. And all of a sudden, ding, they're in my inbox for all these questions. So this might help guide your conversation in prayer. And I would make a suggestion. You don't have to do it. It's on page 12 at the end of the reading. That many of you have come from all over. Many of you, we just had an arrival from Atlanta, Georgia. But we've had Quebecers who are here. We've had people that have come from California who drove through the storm this morning from Kansas City. Many, many people persevered to be able to get here. Some of you, even if you're local, you had to leave some family members behind. Maybe you left a husband you just didn't want to leave. Oh, Lisa, it's okay. She just loves him so much. But there is a reason you persevered, and it's probably because there's been a tug. There's somebody who wants to get to know you and help you. And it just very well may be Venerable Bruno Lanteri. So maybe during this time of prayer, there's a practice that St. Ignatius encourages, the colloquy, where you allow the inspiration of your imagination, your heart, and the Holy Spirit to that, and to believe that saint is with you. And so maybe that's something you can do if you feel comfortable with it, asking Venerable Lanteri, okay, I made it, I'm here, and let him speak to you as though he spoke to Gabriella. See, just, or talk to any, just whatever that might be. And then what we're going to do, after you've had that hour, and I haven't talked to him yet, but I'm now putting him on the spot. Deacon Omar, if you could make sure, maybe Brother Leland can help you. We need to have exposition of the Blessed Sacrament. There's a monstrance in the sacristy. But if you could place that, one of the spots you could go to is the main chapel, and we'll have exposition there, just to have some quiet time. But you don't have to go there either. There's the beautiful solarium. There's nooks and crannies in this place, if you haven't discovered them, where if you just want to walk around, you want to get some coffee, I really am going to encourage you to just eat yourself silly, because we have so many snacks. I do not want to go home with those, because my Lent journey is already tough enough for those sitting back there. So please do that. But just let you know, this is that time. At 3 o'clock, we're going to ask you to gather in small groups. 4 o'clock. Well, I'm on mountain time. No, I'm not. I'm just lying. I'm not. Okay, at 4 o'clock, we're going to ask you to go to small groups. And again, you're not being forced to share or go through the discussion one by one, and you have to, you know, your answer is right or wrong or anything like that. But it's just an opportunity to begin to share in that communal spirit, in the spirit of Father Diesbach, but in particular, Venerable Bruno Lanteri, because he's brought you here. He's going to fashion those small groups. He's going to continue in the Holy Spirit, in cooperation with our willingness to allow it to be guided. Let's see what happens. And then we'll come back here at 5 o'clock, Sister Mary, right? So she's going to talk to you about how those groups are going to be broken open. Now, in future discussions, I won't be getting up here. When Father Gallagher dismisses us, you'll just be dismissed to go and do your meditation. But right now, we just got a little housekeeping on this end.
Okay, so
who better to get us organized than Sister?
So Chris has already asked 7 individuals to be small group leaders. So I'm going to ask, I'm one of them, and the other 6 to come up and just kind of stand here so you can see who the small group leaders are. No. And then we're going to put the Holy Spirit in charge of who is in what group by using good old-fashioned numbering off. And so when I point to you, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, and then start over with 1.
Doug.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 1 One, two, three, four, five, six, and I'm seven. Okay. So then there is one map that is hanging by that back door. So if you don't know what your place means, just remember the name of the room I'm giving you, and then you can look at that map later. Okay? So help me out. You were right. Okay. Is in the solarium and then the library, which is around that direction, around the corner. Right next here is conference room A, and that is where twos will be. We had okay, and I have Yusu in. I'm confused because I had her in the solarium. Okay. Cameron's or me? Kim? Okay, we'll put you in, and I'll explain what this is, parlor one, which is in the other section over there. There's three little rooms, and I'll explain that. Okay, parlor one. Omar was in parlor three, and I am in parlor two. The three groups who are in the parlors. Sorry, Matt. Oh, Matt is in the. Up that wing, halfway down, it's called the Lower Day Lounge. Most of you are in that wing over there on the lower room, halfway down on the left. That's where Matt is. Okay. And I would suggest that at 4 o'clock, the three people who are in the parlors, which is Sue, me, and Omar, kind of meet outside of the chapel, and we'll take you over there the first time so that, yeah, so you don't have to figure out where it is. It's not that hard to find. It's just most of you aren't in that wing. So, all righty. So, okay.
Okay, does everybody remember your number? Okay, you know your person? Okay. Number, okay. All right, everyone, any final thoughts, Father Gallagher? No? Okay. Please enjoy your time of prayer.